Yeah, that's what's so wonderful about pickleball in our club. I mean, it's, you know, we've got 70 members and we've got 50 people waiting on a waiting list, and that's a struggle. As a sort of a club like we are, mm-hmm. I think you must be fairly unique because you've got a facility, whereas we've got five locations where we go and play for 2 hours during the week on different nights. And I think we're getting to that point where victims of your own success, but mm-hmm. you get beginners, intermediates and advanced, and then you get sort of, I call them advanced intermediates, mm-hmm. and then you get advanced, and then mm-hmm. how does a club cater for them? And I think listening to what you're talking about, the PPL, that creating those sort of leagues or environments where some, you can still be associated with a club maybe, and maybe, I don't know, do you see it maybe that clubs could then, you get to a point where you go, right, we've got all these clubs, we want you to put a team together, a bit like, have you been involved with the SEPL?
I haven't, but I know what it is, yeah.
And we're playing on Sunday, but similarly to something like that where, mm-hmm. I've only played, this is my second year playing, so the first year it was like, hands up, who wants to play, mm-hmm. we'll put a team out. This year's a club, we've got three teams, it was like, right, you group are going to be in the first squad, mm-hmm. you're going to be in the second squad, and you're going to be third, picked on your ability now.
Yeah.
But going forward, could you see that being something, you know, outside of the clubs, because to give more people more challenges?
I think so. I think one of the things as well to consider is there are a lot of people that want to play competitively and some people just want to play socially.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you and I, very competitive, always want to try and win the game or whatever. Yeah. But there are some people that just want to come and have a hit along. But as you say, in terms of the levels, you know, Duper are making their sort of rating much more accurate now. You know, that people always will have sort of debates on whether they should be higher or lower. But it's getting more and more accurate as time goes on. More scores that you put into your sort of ranking system, it will update accordingly. And I think it's one of those ones that, you know, being in, let's say, Division 2 or whatever it is, you shouldn't be seeing it as like, oh, I'm not as good as them. It's more like, I'm going to try and win this and then move to
exactly,
the next one.
Exactly.
Because the last thing you want to do is go be put in the Division 1, be completely out of your depth and lose every game.
And that... because the Duper has been bought by Agassi and his friends, or
majorly invested in, I think. Yeah,
majorly invested. Because yeah. I saw him chat about it, saying that, you know, he thinks it's great that you've got this rating, so you could go anywhere technically in the world and go like, you know, I'm a 3.8. Is anyone available in that category? Here I'm thinking, struggling about how you're getting your rating. We did it internally within the club to start it.
That's how we did it last week at where I work. Yeah,
and then go to a couple of tournaments on your own volition to go and play, but then some of the tournaments aren't doing it. And I'm just wondering, like, how accurate it is at the moment, because you turn up and there's some people in there, you go, no, you're not a 3.5. Or should the categories be closed off, you know, 3.5 to 3.75, or I don't know.
I think the more data that gets put into it, the more accurate it gets. So it's one of those ones that I think a lot more tournaments in Europe you'll find this year will put scores into Duper, because players want it going into Duper.
Yeah.
They don't want to just win a medal and then, you know, nothing happens.
Sandbaggers, is it?
Exactly. And that's the term I try to avoid there, but yes.
I've heard that. Someone else mentioned the sandbagging, isn't it? Just going for medals.
And then, you know, so like the English Open, English Nationals, they're the two biggest tournaments that England have. All those scores go into Duper. And Karen said specifically last year, well, one, Nationals is rated off Duper. But also, if you signed up for 3.5, but your Duper was 4.1, she moved you up. You didn't have a choice. It was just done like
that. What, at the Nationals?
Yeah, because they didn't want sandbagging to happen.
You're right.
If you were basically more than 0.5 higher on your Duper than the thing, they moved you up. Because, like, it's the National Championships, regardless if you're playing pro or 3.5.
That's the Nationals, not the Open.
Not the Open. Well, I think they might have done the same for the Open. Right. All I know is it was definitely done for Nationals. You know, 3.5, they want to play against 3.5s. Like, they don't want to play against a 4.0 and get smashed in the round robin in the final. Yeah. And then, because the last thing people want to hear is, oh, you know, the 4.0's won the 3.5. You want to say, oh, that was a really good match.
Yeah.
The better team won. Like, and that's what it's all about.
And that's how you get better, isn't it? By playing better people. Because I've got a guy I'm playing with. I haven't played with him yet, but he wants to play in the fours. Mm-hmm. I'm technically a 3.7 or 8, I think. I'm going to play in the fours with him I don't care whether I win or lose. I want
experience.
Experience to see. And you get used to playing with your club players. You get used to now going to these tournaments and seeing the same sort of people. And you only get better. I think when I played squash at school, it was the same. You know, you play better people, you get better at it, don't you?
Well, I think it's one of those things. Yeah. Like, you know, you see the similar thing at when people have the opportunity to play with better players. I always say, you know, if you're in court against with Thalia, let's say, you know, you're playing against her.
I played with her and against her at our Red Rose Day.
Play shots to her and try and beat her.
Yeah,
because
you're
not going to learn by hitting it to a weaker partner and go, oh, well, no, we beat Thalia, because you didn't. Like, that's the thing. Like, people want to, you should take her on and then try and get where she hits her shots and kind of work it out from there, because that will help.
Not 5 to 9 shots ahead, though.
Not in the fine five, maybe 12, depending if you've got a cone on your head or not, but we'll see what happens from there.
You know who we're talking about? Yeah, exactly that. Because she's done some coaching down at our club, and well, the first thing she did was she got us all to have a play and then come off, and she said, right, just talking to you all, how many shots do you think you play in a rally? And, you know, she said, 0 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, and we're all sort of going, 5 to 10. And she said, really? No, you probably don't even get to 5. And everyone's trying to win the point so early. And then at the end of the session, we did it again, and there was a court down the far end that weren't part of it. And she said, look at them over there, and they weren't even getting 4 rallies in. And we were doing 15 to 20. And it's that, that's how the game should be. And I think it's like, things like spinning and at that higher level, it's not as prominent as you think it might be. There's a lot of patience at your level, isn't there? I mean,
supposedly,
because you're fast hand Luke, aren't you?
Well, I mean, I try to, like, so I practice a lot against the squash ball to practice my reactions, and kind of, I see that one of the strengths of my game. You know, I don't have the tennis hitting experience, so I have, like, doubles suits me quite well in terms of a bit
that
of
that. Your preference doubles?
Yeah, I mean, I like really running around a singles court and just trying to.
Different game, do you think? Is it a different
game?
For
me, it's a completely different game. Because
is it more like tennis?
Yes. Singles? Now it is. If you watch out in the States, you have to be a good tennis player to play well in it. It's really tricky to sort of play a much cat and mouse game, because people can hit the ball so flat and hard with so much spin that the ball is going to go in if no matter how really how hard they hit it.
Right.
And so kind of my singles game, to be honest, in the last 6 months changed quite considerably, that I've decided I'm just going full aggressive whenever I play. And trying to win the ball or trying to win the rally on the third shot every single time. And then if I don't, hustle from there.
And is that, if I was to go and play singles, would that be your sort of advice? Look, you know, be aggressive, because it's completely different to doubles.
Yeah, I would in singles be as aggressive as you can.
Right.
Some people might tell you the complete opposite. But the
you don't see many dinking rallies though, do you?
No. And to be honest, what you're finding is with, you know, paddles becoming more powerful, having more spin on them, players playing with more experience are getting better, you can hit like the ball a lot harder with more spin and it will still go in. Like a few years ago, you know, you're playing with kind of not wooden paddles, but like, you know, the shiny paddles that you could polish.
I mean, I know Diadem Sporting, I know
we'll hide that one for now.
You're sponsored by Franklin and Skechers, but actually you might have to help though, just for people, is like the difference in the paddles though, and I just slightly digress, the thick ones and the thin ones, what is fundamentally the difference in them, like the thinner one and the thicker ones?
So on the whole, a thinner paddle will have more pop on it.
Right.
Potentially more power, but slightly less control. So you'll find people maybe will use a thinner paddle for singles, and maybe if they're really techy on it, and then a thicker paddle for doubles because it's got more control for dinking.
Right.
I use the same. I use a 14 mil paddle. Which is kind of
is that a thicker one or in between?
That one looks thicker. That one looks quite thin.
And yours is what?
Probably in between. Nearer that one.
And has it got a lot? Because there's a lot of grit on
carbon face.
They have
now.
More grit on it.
Yes,
it's more spin, isn't it?
Yeah. So most paddles now, or most sort of higher quality in terms of paddles level wise, will be made of carbon face, because it's much rougher. They used to sort of be that sort of fiberglass or kind of that kind of. With maybe a rough spec that wore off after a few times you played.
Yeah.
But now it's pure carbon and the paddle lasts a lot longer and it's rough, and so it generates a lot more power and spin.
Could you see, because of the ethos, well, I'm assuming the ethos of pickleball, that's why the rules were originally like having dink and no volley zone and stuff, so you weren't sort of bringing tennis straight onto a pickleball court. The way that the singles game is going, could you see maybe some rule changes?
Well, I think...
Or is it necessary?
I don't necessarily want to misquote him, but I think I heard Ben John saying something about the paddles the other day and how powerful they're starting to become out in the States. I don't think they're necessarily going to change any rules. You know, you've seen them changing that serve rule out in the States about 4 times in the last 4 years. You've gone from being able to spin it off your paddle, you can spin it, then you can't throw it up on the PPA tour. Now you have to have a downward hand when you hit it.
Okay.
So I mean, like the serving rules are changing, because I think originally in pickleball, they don't want the serve to be just a winning shot, which is kind of what it started becoming right. during the COVID time when you could spin out your hand or off the grip, which you can kind of understand to a certain point because they don't want, you know, some player just to come in and win the point off the serve every single time. But I mean, it's one of those ones that I don't necessarily see rules changing. I think they might just be slightly tweaked, but I can't see anything sort of becoming so, like, there'd be such a dramatic change that everyone's going to be like, oh wow, that's a ridiculous change.
But if points don't last long, it's not much of a spectacle, is it? So eventually, if the game's going to grow, but I mean, I suppose in America, was it 9 million officially, but maybe 30 million that play it? Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't need any changes because there's a lot of people that play it anyway. But over here to make, because I know at the moment when I started, it was all about doubles. It's mixed doubles. We've had mix, and then I said, oh, so you do singles as well. And I haven't seen much of an environment for singles yet.
I think that's more due to lack of time and space. So obviously you can only have two on a court.
Yeah.
And if you've got 24 for a four court session, that's six a court. Yeah. Having two on one court makes it sort of really tough. But in terms of, you know, you're saying about maybe it will stop the growth if it just becomes fast. Well, I mean, if you'd watched me play 3 years ago versus watching me play now, reaction or any, to be honest, anyone at most levels, their hand speed will be faster than it was a few years ago because of how the game's developing and how you have to adapt. And I think watching it out in the States, people's hands are, like, I think I've got quite quick hands.
Well,
watching
I was it out told, in the fast hands, there's a few videos on YouTube.
There are a few, yeah.
Fast hands, Louis.
But I was playing out in the States and I was just getting minced by some people in hands battles.
Really?
Yeah. And they're just, the hand speed of people now is ridiculous. So, you know, the paddles are getting, the shots are getting faster and faster with more spin. But I think the game will sort of naturally tweak to maybe a bit more power, and then it'll change probably to someone working out how to negate that more. And it kind of, it changes quite a lot, which is quite cool.
And what do you think the benefits of pickleball are from an individual person across the board? Encouraging people to come and play. Why would you say, come and play pickleball?
I think it can change your life, to be honest.
In what way?
So, I mean...
Oh, excuse me, carry on.
It's all right, I'll get your glasses for you.
Thank you.
It's one of those sports that, well, as we say, is completely accessible from anyone aged 6 to 90.
Yeah.
So...
Don't limit at 90, because I've got a plan about when I'm 100, I might win a gold somewhere.
Okay, fine. There you go. Okay, well, 90 plus then. Also, yeah. I know this because
I'll be taking you on.
Right. I did a kids camp yesterday, which had a 6-year-old in it. And I had a beginner's class yesterday, which had a 90-year-old in it. And that was yesterday.
Was that at Roehampton?
Yeah, at work yesterday. So that was like literally yesterday I have that demographic.
Because I think digress slightly. Mm-hmm. I think Martin, they went to a tournament in Cambridge and there was on court in a game. Mm-hmm. I think there was a 60-odd year difference between players on that pit. And that was great.
But exactly. Anyway,
sorry, you
can. And so it's one of those sports that you can play, to be honest, potentially longer than golf. Just because the movement's kind of back and forward rather than round.
Yeah.
So it's nothing too much maybe about sort of back and things like that. But also, it's so sociable. You can get 16 people or more on the equivalent of one tennis court.
Yeah.
You're playing in close proximity. You can have a chat after rally and, you know, have a bit of a smile about what a shot that was or whatever it was. And then what usually happens, people go to the bar and have a social time afterwards. So like from physical point of view, it's good physical exercise without being absolutely blowout exhausting.
Yeah.
From then sort of a mental and social point of view, you know, it gets people out, gets people playing sport, having a good time, having a drink together, having a bit of food and making new friends. It's absolutely phenomenal.
I agree. I totally agree. And I think from a mental health perspective, I think it's one of those sports, I don't know about you, but you're in the moment when you play. You can't be distracted. You can't be sort of going, what's going on over there? What's going on? You have to be focused, and it takes you out of whatever's going on in your world to be there. And I think I was talking to one of our club members and she's a doctor, and obviously there's loads of mental health chat going on at the moment. And I see it as potentially even for kids, it's probably a great place to get them out and just get them off their phones. Another conversation, you know, there is a world outside, you know, instant is the phones and stuff. Even though I'm trying to use social media to help promote this and actually trying to educate maybe the older generation that, you know, there is stuff on there that is quite useful to you. Some people haven't heard of TikTok or Instagram.
Yeah.
So we're introducing it both ways. But yeah, I totally agree. I fell in love with it. I played a bit of table tennis, a bit of tennis, a bit of squash and, you know, a bit of badminton. And you just thought, it sort of encompasses it all, doesn't it?
I always find there's people that will be resistant to have a try at it.
Yeah.
You know, they've heard it's called pickleball and it's, you know, the sport for the old name. People and all this
name,
stuff.
Do you think the name's a problem?
Don't know. I think it's known enough now that people don't go, what is like that stupid name sport? But I think it's one of those ones that people have a bit of a, oh, it's like mini tennis and it's old person sport, yeah, really loosely. But, you know, it's, they get on court and they're skeptical, but after 10 minutes, they know how to play. They've learned the rules. They know how to score. They can actually play a rally against someone who's been playing for 6 months and they potentially beat them.
Yeah.
And then you're like, they're like, oh, this is great. Have fun. When's the next session? And then you hook them so quickly. I mean, that's why the participation figures worldwide are going up so fast, because that's how it sort of develops.
Well, I think the number is 14,000 sort of in the UK, but I think it's going to be 25,000 next year. And
supposedly,
it's exponentially growing.
Mm-hmm.
And I also hear rumours that, you know, like having dedicated facilities just for pickleball. Because then my question from a business point of view is like, how, you know, you've got to have footfall and foot traffic. You know, I think you're probably unique because you've got everything at Roehampton. Mm-hmm. But in America, is there a thing called like chicken pickle or something?
Yeah, so that's what's going to happen in London, especially because of, you know, costs of warehouses and rentals and all that stuff. Is the main income to start with will be the bar and the food and kind of the corporate event style stuff.
Yeah.
And it will be a court venue, maybe, you know, 4, 5, 6 court venue, maybe a couple of paddle courts as well. So you've got both options.
Yeah.
A bar with food.
Yeah.
And maybe some kind of social area. And people can come play sport, have, you know, have a shower afterwards and then go have dinner and a few drinks. And that's kind of one of those, as you said, chicken and pickle style. They've got pickle and par in America. They've got putt shack style in pickleball version, you know.
Right.
You play pickleball for an hour. Maybe there's some like kind of digital game you can play whilst you're doing
it. A bit like Topgolf, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's going to become really successful, isn't it? Because I know the guys, rather than going down a driving range and hitting 50 balls into nothing, they want competition when they're doing it.
And you only hit, I think you pay at Topgolf and you only hit 20 balls in 2 hours or whatever it is, and you still have a great time.
And you get beers or drinks delivered to you. Probably not a good idea on pickleball courts.
I'll tell you what, some of my best matches have been after a few beers. So,
you know what? I don't disagree with that. Like night before rugby game, a few beers the night before always relaxes you. And calms down. Because I was talking to Maisie Wise and she said she had a hen night or a hen do that came down and she did 2 hours of pickleball with them and they loved it. It's another great
idea. That's a great new avenue for business proposition, stag doing hen do's.
Exactly. I know. When do we start?
Yeah.
I just hope it gets the right backing, the right support. I hear rumours around this area that there are some entrepreneurs looking at it and, you know, we get it right. And how do we deal with clubs? Because that's the problem. We don't, none of us have homes, you know, as a club. You know, we have facilities that we go to.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, last Tuesday every month, let's go. We're all going to meet down the pub. Well, I'm not playing Tuesday night. I only play a Wednesday and a Friday and it doesn't happen. What I'd love is that, like, you probably... If you weren't there, you just a member of Roehampton, you'd go down there and go, well, I'm just going to go down to Roehampton because there's always something going on, isn't there? Big screens for other sports on. And is there football on down there?
Yeah, so unfortunately, I had to watch the Man United game last
night. Which is why we've got this. So, Louis, where were you born and bred?
Wimbledon, London. All Man United fans based in London, basically.
I was born in Wimbledon and I was a Wimbledon fan in the crazy gang days and always been a Liverpool fan. But they were my second team Wimbledon. So how do you become a Man United fan?
I guess it's one of those ones when I was about 6 years old. You know, you get all your friends at school going, oh, who do you support? Who do you support? I didn't even know anything about football then. So I just picked the team at the top of the table.
And it happened to be Man
United. And it happened to be Man United. And then I've been stuck with them ever since.
Because they reckon there are more fans in the South than there are in Manchester, aren't they?
It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest.
So you must be suffering a little bit after last night.
Yeah, it was quite disappointing. We finished pickleball training, went up 3-2 up, and then by the time I had my pint, we were 4-3 down. So,
well, we've got you on Sunday at your place, so we owe you one after the FA Cup, so that could be interesting.
Yeah, I think we're going to get stuffed.
You think so? I don't know. Do you think Ten Hag will stay? Or do you think he won't have a choice?
The thing is, I don't know if I actually want him to stay, but based on some of the rumours of the people they want to line up if he doesn't stay.
Like Gareth Southgate?
Yeah, that kind of option. I think.
Are you a fan?
No, not too much of a fan, to be honest. I like watching attacking football, which is why, you know, even though I'm not a fan of Man City, Liverpool, I quite like watching them play. And then, you know, like Bournemouth, they play really attacking football. They always kind of want to score goals and, like, you know, they obviously want to defend, but, like, making it a bit more exciting to watch is way better than trying to grinding out a 1-0 result.
Yeah. So that's how you play pickleball then, attacking.
Yeah, a bit more flashy, I guess.
Have you got a stock shot that's yours that people will reckon, oh, that's a Louis shot?
Yeah, I kind of have like this backhand, which is like I just play a backhand everywhere, and whether it's out here or here.
Even
just
in the chicken wing.
Yeah, I'll sit here, which I think is quite a good shot. But if you play with me every week, you kind of know where to hit it, where I can't necessarily get it. So Freddie and James exploit it quite a lot in training. But, you know, when you play against people that don't play against you every week, kind of it works as quite a good strength because they think it's a shot that I'm not going to get back, but I do.
Because there's a few videos of trick shots, like the Ernie and...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ernie Burton ATP.
I know the ATP around the post. What's the Burton?
So the Burt is...
Or the Burt.
So the Ernie is when you're on your side of the court and you like hop over to your side.
You hop over the no volley zone.
So if I'm on the backhand side, I'll jump to the backhand side of the...
And volley it.
Yeah. So a Burt would be, if I'm, let's say I'm playing mixed doubles, my mixed doubles partner's Pei, and like a ball's popped up, I will jump in front of Pei over the kitchen that way and hit it.
Oh, I see.
So you're jumping across
on your forehand.
Yeah, that okay. would be what the bird.
Whereas
is.
The is Yoni doesn't matter. Does Yoni doesn't matter whether it's a backhand or is that normally a volley going across the backhand side?
Yoni's more jumping your side and the bird's jumping the other side. That's okay. Kind of how.
Do you know how they got their names?
Probably the people that first did it.
Probably Ernie and Bert sound like Sesame Street, doesn't it?
I know it does indeed. Yeah.
This is why I'm hoping that the community will grow and people, you know, just enjoying this. Sketchers,
mm-hmm.
obviously sponsor you.
Yeah.
The brand, because obviously people used to associate Sketchers with old people's shoes.
Yeah, I know.
But they've moved on.
Well, what's unbelievable about it, someone was telling me that it's the number two shoe in the States behind Nike now.
Oh, really?
Which is ridiculous. Like, I was like, I was amazed. And they're, you know, they're growing massively.
Are they an American brand?
I think it's an American brand that's right. Now, but I mean, it's now worldwide.
Yeah.
Like, I mean... Thaddeus took a picture in India of a Skechers store out there and it was like, it's, well, why they kind of, you know, I saw them at the US Open last year and kind of just had a chat with them, said I was the only English guy there and then kind of got in touch with Will and Emma from the team, Petra and, you know, Rich, and they're it's actually a proper family. Like they...
Thaddeus said, she said they're a lovely brand.
We went to do
with.
A coaching clinic with all their staff up in St. Albans back at the end of last year. And it was just the most fun day. We were out there for like 6 hours playing pickleball on these badminton courts. None of them had ever played before.
Oh, wow.
And it was just a really fun day. And they all were there, these Skechers shoes on and like playing. It was just a load of fun. So yeah, I really love being a part of that family. You know, looking forward to heading out to the US Open, meeting the American team in a couple of weeks as well.
Yeah, because they ventured, I believe, into football boots as well. Because mm-hmm. I think Harry Kane is mm-hmm. wearing a pair or something.
Mm.
So we're just saying to the lads, you know, have a chat.
I was saying he's scoring all his goals because of those boots.
They are Skechers boots. He's actually playing in.
They are actually Skechers boots. They designed him a special pair and they've done Matt Fitzpatrick for golf as well. So they've designed him.
So they're going big time.
They are now a proper mass market brand because obviously I think they used to, you know, do like soft shoes.
Well, it was comfy shoes for old people, wasn't it?
Exactly.
I mean, old people, but it wouldn't be seen a lot of the time. You wouldn't be seen dead in them. And,
I go to work in them every day. They're so comfortable.
Well, Jamie Redknapp was showing them off as well, wasn't
exactly,
he?
Exactly, yeah.
See, I got a pair of Djokovic's, sorry, I haven't changed, but these are Djokovic's sort of tennis shoes because of seeing what's available. But mm-hmm. I mean, I know...
Your podcast, you probably should have been wearing another pair, potentially.
Maybe I should have been, but unfortunately Harvey didn't have my size, but you know, these. But again, I mean, Diadem have just sort of invested in shoes and they're trying it out. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, where do you start? Because, I mean, you need... It's all about feel, though, isn't it? And
to be honest, mine were about the colour. I saw a pink pair of shoes and I was like, oh, that's me sold. And they've got some really exciting colours coming out. So, I mean, Thaddeus got a new pair of purple. In the men's side, they've got a proper tangerine orange pair. So like, they've actually made the colours like exciting, which makes more people want to buy them.
Nike do something like that where you could have like design your boot in any colour?
Yeah, it was
like
a Nike ID or something.
You can go to the shop and you can sort of do any sort of that for pickleball shoes.
Yeah, I think maybe they should.
What size are you?
9.5.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Yeah. I'll sort you out a pair. Don't worry about it.
Sorry, Harvey. No. Oh, mate, look, it's so been good. Great to meet you. What's the future holding for you?
The rest of this year is going to be busy. I think I've already done three tournaments. I've got about another 15 lined up. So
really?
It's almost going
in
to,
the UK?
No, mostly around Europe.
Right.
You know, US Open will be one. I'll probably do an Asian one and then probably mostly Europe from there, which is, you know, there's ones in France, Spain, Germany, Sweden.
Do you have to qualify them, or do you just
There's one in Austria in December, which is a qualification one. So that's the top eight players in each category will qualify based on events from the English Open, the Revolution Cup, which is in the south of Spain, a German one, and a Swedish one.
Right.
So that'd be quite a good one, because that'd be quite competitive and feisty. But the rest of them are kind of not standalone tournaments, but they're people just trying to, you know, help grow the sport and have a fun competition. Like we went to Belgium last year. A group of about six of us went, and it was not the biggest event, you know, a couple of hundred people, but it was just a great fun weekend in Belgium.
Like, yeah.
Belgian
beers are right, isn't it?
Oh, it was great, yeah.
How do you get a rank? I mean, how is your ranking? Because you are regarded as one of the or the top European player.
I mean, I guess by Dupa, I've got the highest doubles Dupa for a male player living in Europe.
Which is
5.96. So I need to get over that six barrier soon.
Are there many six players in the world?
Yeah. I think the top 50 or 60 men are 6.0 plus. And then the top 15 women are as well. So like there's some very good players. I mean, Ben Johns is over seven. So
he's quite special.
He's quite good at the sport, yeah.
What makes him so special?
I think he does think nine shots ahead. That is the thing. Like, he is very, very smart. He knows where he's playing, but he also, because people fear playing against him, the thing. I think the reason potentially he started to lose some matches, not many. He's still world number one and beats most people and wins gold most weeks, but he's lost a couple of games because people are starting to be not afraid of
this
him.
Is singles.
Well, and doubles. And doubles. You know, because what happens in doubles is I find in tournaments that people just don't want to hit me the ball at times. And so they'll try and hit the ball to my partner, even though the shot's just not on. And then they'll lose the point because it's popped up for my partner. And, you know, sometimes the sensible shot is actually hitting it to the stronger person just to sort of negate me or move me back out of position.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you watch a lot of mixed doubles, the man can stand halfway over the court because the girl's too afraid to hit it to him.
Yeah.
And so then the guy can keep creeping over and over. And if the girl just drops one behind him, I have to come all the way back.
Yeah.
And then that opens up my partner to hit the ball then.
And he has an abundance of patience, I take it, as well.
He is. I mean, he's drills a lot. I think he said he drills 2 to 3 hours a day and goes to the gym 2 hours a day. So, he's obviously one number one for a reason. He's absolutely phenomenal. He's got a proper pickleball brain, which is what quite a lot in Europe lack, I think.
What was his background, you know?
I think table tennis.
Okay.
Oh, well, he definitely played some tennis, but I think table tennis. But, you know, he's been playing pickleball since longer than me, so 8 years plus. So, kind of, his sport is pickleball.
That's not long, is it? I mean, 7 or 8 years playing a sport and becoming where you are now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you can sustain the level, or do you think, is there a challenge? I mean, there's obviously challenges coming up.
I mean, I'm going to play as long as I can and have as much fun as I can doing it. And, you know, I'm very competitive. I'm probably one of the most competitive people.
Are you a good loser?
Yeah. I think I am a pretty good loser.
A good winner?
Yeah. I want to win, but of course, I won't sort of... do anything to, I don't like riling up opponents or doing anything to, I just like literally just playing and
not
sort
a Medvedev
of,
who likes to psych no, his people and,
no, exactly,
and
yeah.
do naughty things and
no I kind of to be honest,
go stop for toilet breaks and
yeah exactly no kind of what I do want to do is, you know, finish if I'm playing a singles game, finish the game and we'll just go for a beer literally within 30 seconds of finishing the game. And that's kind of, you know, I want to win the sport, I want to be the best player I can be, best player in Europe, whatever, but off the court I just want to be Louis and play and have fun and, you know, enjoy myself.
And obviously at the moment, are you self-coached?
We don't have sort of any coaching kind of at our level in UK. So, but myself, James, Thaddeus, Pei, Freddie, Ben as well, kind of, we train with each other to try and get better. And, you know, going out to the States a couple of weeks ago has kind of taught us a few things that we need to come and then work on. So we do our best.
You know, I was just thinking, wouldn't it be great that pickleball was in the Olympics? It would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
It would be. I think it's not going to be in LA 28. I don't think it'll be Melbourne 32.
Are they campaigning for it?
I'm not sure, but regardless, I don't think it'd be that. I think if it's got a chance, it'll be in, I think it's meant to be in India in 2036. I think it's either Mumbai or Delhi. And
is that already been decided then? Where they
I don't think it's necessarily decided, but I think, you know, the way some of the voting goes. Like, I think maybe Delhi won't vote a petition for the Melbourne one to make sure they get the next one or something like that. So if it is in India in 2036, I think that's its best first shot because of, you know, the people at global sports. And
because even squash isn't in the Olympics yet, is it? I don't think
it is 2028.
It is now.
Yeah, it is now.
It's like ridiculous that it hasn't been, because table tennis has, I think, hasn't it?
Table tennis has, and there's been some pretty other rogue sports. Like, I think, well, there's, well, was got, it street climb, street dancing in the Paris one this year?
And I think they've got tag NFL in the US one, isn't it?
Yeah, so they've got some interesting things. I think you know, in the next 10, 15 years, it might start featuring. It's only so many years and so many people that can play it before it.
Could you see a pickleball World Cup?
So they're actually doing a kind of pickleball World Cup in Peru later this year.
Right.
It's for like sort of people with a duper rating of 5 and below, I think. So like it's kind of limited on the level to make sure it's not just like one person just coming along and win the whole thing. So no. I think it will happen at some point. There are, you know, the European Pickleball Federation are doing a European team championships November this year, which is kind of...
That's the one in Southampton.
Yeah. So that's going to be this team from Austria, France, Sweden, Spain, England, and Germany are already signed up. And there's quite an abundance of other countries.
So who selects the English team? Who's the head of selection?
I don't know, to be honest. We'll have to see. I'll have to start buttering up whoever it is.
I mean, whoever is the tournament director. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? That governance as well is important going forward.
Yes, and I think it's now been set up. The European Federation has actually been set up kind of with the values of the IOC and the kind of proper governance that when it does become talked about for IOC approval and kind of things that the European Federation, which syncs in with the World Federation, I'm not sure which one it is, have actually got the proper accreditations that it actually can be approved. Because I think some of the random ones that people want to classify as their own World Federation have just no policies that the IOC would even consider approving at the moment. But we'll see how it goes. I think it's one of those ones that's, we're in a really exciting time, especially in the UK, with development in courts now is going to start happening. And I think international development of the sport is going to continue happening over the next 10 years plus, because it's just growing so quickly. And that's what's really exciting.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, Louis, we've been nearly chatting an hour, so it's been great to meet you.
Thank you very much for your time. No worries at all. Cheers. Thank you very much.
Good luck with the future.
Yes, thank you very much.